Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. Back with us today, Erin Presley. She's a horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison, where she cares for the herb, wildflower, and pond gardens. She's put together a list of gardening gift ideas for us, and of course, we'll take all of your calls as well. Maybe you have some ideas for gifts, or maybe you have a question relating to the vegetable garden or the flower garden or flowers in general. I hope you'll join in. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And, of course, we always love to hear from you, so get a hold of us. Erin Presley, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing in these COVID times?
I'm doing super well. We're really grateful here at Olbrich that we've stayed so healthy this summer and provided a place for people to get out safely and enjoy the garden. And the outdoor gardens have been, you know, are still open every day, and our conservatory is open as well.
Yeah, and it's always fun to go, no matter what time of the year, to be perfectly honest. Well, gift giving, I have most of my gifts purchased, but there, I always look for gardening gifts from to give myself as well as other people. You have a little list put together here, and I thought, let's go through some of that list while we're waiting for people to call in with their questions or comments. And the first thing on your list, I took a look at that, and I said, well, that's a bit surprising. It's tea. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, here in Wisconsin, we are very fortunate to live in the state that provides the highest quality ginseng, both at home and abroad. And so I included on my list some really nice tea bags that are made with little bits of dried ginseng. And ginseng, as you know, is an adaptogen, which means it's an herb that is mild enough that it can be recommended for most people. And it also works best when it's used on a regular basis. So it's the sort of thing that you can consume daily. And that's actually when it does its best work. And it's known for enhancing mental clarity, creativity, general mental function. So one of my favorite things to do here in the winter when we're getting our designs ready for next year is get a cup of that ginseng tea going and then sit down at my computer or grab some seed catalogs and start daydreaming about design for next year. Yeah, it's getting to be about that time too.
It is getting to be about that time. And I should mention, everybody, Erin's list, it's called Erin Presley's Gardening Gift List 2020. To get a copy of that list, just go to my website, go to WPR.org/Larry, and I believe you'll find the list over in the notes section. So she's got where to go to find all these things as well. So starting right out with some tea, ginseng tea. What else have we got here? You talked to both gardeners and cooks, a tool that they will appreciate. Talk about the scissors from gardeners.com.
Yes, I don't know if any of you folks out there have ever used a multi-bladed scissors, but it's basically like a standard kitchen scissors. And then instead of having just one cutting blade, it has like three or four different blades. So it works really great for making fine ribbons of herbs to add as a garnish or a flavor component at the end of your cooking cycle. So it's great for leafy herbs like parsley or basil. I use it to make really fine pieces out of chives. And I tell you, it's one of those things in your kitchen. I'm not a big kitchen gadget person, and I live in a very small apartment. So the little kind of gadgety things that you add to your kitchen are pretty few and far between at my house, but the herb scissors definitely has an important place.
I love that idea because the regular scissors just don't work as well when it comes to that.
Yeah, and sure. It's real quick. real great for right at the end of the meal. You don't need a cutting board or anything. Just run out to the garden, grab a little handful of whatever you want to add, and basically snip it right over the top of whatever you're cooking at the moment.
And I wonder how much time gardeners lose looking for their pruners. I've spent a little of that time. You have a great suggestion for keeping track of them.
Yeah, well, hopefully, people who have been experienced gardeners or getting to be more serious gardeners know the joy of using a high quality pruners. And so typically, kind of the industry standard is the Felco number 2 pruners, which is just a great superlative cutting implement. But that tool doesn't really do you very much good if you're, you know, outside and you're scrambling around, you're searching high and low in your potting shed, you left your pruners on the, you know, kitchen table, and you're out at the far end of the yard now. But the holsters that Felco actually makes are made out of leather. And this is one of my most prized gardening possessions is my holster, which I have had since the beginning of my green industry career. So I think at this point, it's probably 16 or 17 years old. And it's pretty ratty, but it has just that feel of really nice aged leather where it's really glossy and smooth in some areas and kind of tattered and rough and textural in other areas. Fits like a glove, and mine still has a lot of life in it. So it's really a no-brainer of an investment, and help you hopefully prevent losing those expensive pruners, which we all know is a bummer too.
And I'm guessing, 17 years, and you're somebody who probably uses them more than the average person. So the average person is probably going to get a lifetime out of it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, mine has a lot of life left in it. And it's just one of those things that, you know, when you get up in the morning and I'm getting ready to go to work, you have a certain order of events that you follow that makes you feel like you're really getting in the zone to get out there and do some good gardening. And clipping that holster onto your pocket or your belt loop or whatever is just like, feels like, okay, now it is go time.
Erin Presley, our guest, questions for her. You may have some gift questions or suggestions, or you may just have a question about flowers or vegetables. You can join in 800-642-1234. We'll sprinkle in these gift ideas as we move along here. Susie in New Berlin, though, has a question for you. So let's go there. Susie, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions about wildflowers. First one is, I collected wildflower seeds from a couple of different places around here, and I'm wondering if it's too late for me to scatter them in the area of my yard that I wanted them to be in.
And you've got snow out there, right, Susie?
I'm in New Berlin, kind of. I mean, we've got a little bit left.
Okay. What do you think, Erin?
Yeah, I think this is an A-okay time. If you have too much snow out there, you know, you're going to want to shovel off most of that. But even if you have an inch or so, I think you could sow seed right on top of that. And that is, of course, assuming that what you have underneath the snow is some sort of prepared seed bed, you know, open soil or, garden soil that you were getting ready to sow. But this is a great time to sow seeds of native plants or wildflowers, especially because so many of our native plants, they do really rely on the seasonal change to meet their requirements to break seed dormancy. So the variations in the winter temperatures, freezing and thawing, the moisture that comes from the snowfall, those are all really important things that the seed needs to experience over the winter. And then when spring comes, having experienced those cues is what allows the seed to know that it's time to wake up and germinate. So I'd say get out there and and it doesn't matter. Most wildflower seeds additionally do not need to be really incorporated into the soil very much. They usually germinate pretty readily right on top of the soil surface. So unless you have something, you know, a real oddball species, you're going to have pretty good luck with just scattering those seeds on, you know, wherever you have open soil right now and waiting for the spring.
And Susie, did you have another question?
Yeah, the other question is, I was just in Washington at the base of the North Cascades, and I bought a fairly large amount of wildflower seeds gathered from there. And
from Washington State.
Split them. From Washington State. I'm wondering now if I should plant them here in Wisconsin or if I should give them back to my son.
And your son lives in Washington?
Yeah.
Sure. I would say, assuming that you got those seeds from a reputable source, the plants in them shouldn't really have potential to be invasive or troublesome here in Wisconsin. So if you're looking to experiment and willing to kind of see what works out of that seed mixture or not, and just, you know, not be stressed out about things that do or do not work here, I'd say give it a go yourself. That can't hurt, and you might be exposed to something really neat that you never would have thought would grow here. If you're really invested in the seed packet and you really want to see everything in it thrive, then it's probably a better idea to give it back to your son, and then he can grow those things in the climate that they're used to growing in.
Yeah, I'd still be tempted to experiment, though, with it. Susie, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. George in Wanakee, it's your turn. Hi, George.
Aaron, I am so excited. This is George. Ann and I donated those big vases in front of the Rose Garden many years ago as a Christmas present. I gave that to her as a Christmas present. And now you just mentioned this holster for her pruning thing. And she's always losing those in the garden because, you know, she carries them out there, puts them down, and then doesn't know where they are. Is there anywhere you can get a belt which would have, like, for a hand spade and for her pruning stuff and scissors and stuff? Have you ever run across anything like that?
Yeah. The place that we typically do a lot of our equipment ordering from, this is just one place to start checking out. And I'm not sure if they actually have this product, but they in most likelihood do. This is A.M. Leonard is the name of the supplier. And it's a horticulture supply company, and they carry a lot of things that are in the vein of holders or carriers for your tools, kind of fanny pack style deals. So I think that would be a good place to start looking. And a lot of those will have a place both for a pruners and then maybe a saw and a weeding knife or any combination of tools.
Yeah, and Falco, do you think Falco might have them, Aaron?
I believe Falco might make one that has a spot for a soil knife and a pruners. But I think you're just going to have to do a little bit of checking around on the internet. And I don't personally have a favorite go-to when it comes to like a combination holder myself. Although I know several of the other gardeners here have some rigs like that they use pretty frequently.
And name that first one again, the one that you think is best.
Yeah, we do a lot of our shopping for gardening supplies through A.M. Leonard. So Leonard is L-E-O-N-A-R-D, like the man's name, A.M. Leonard. And they have a good online catalog.
All right, George, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. Love those as well. Just email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller with Aaron Presley, and you're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. We're talking about holiday gifts for the gardener on this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller with my guest, Aaron Presley from Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. And, of course, she's taking your other questions relating to vegetables or herbs or flowers. Love to hear from you. Again, it's 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Zach in Jackson. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. I had a comment for the last caller. He was looking for a tool belt for his gardening supplies.
Yeah.
My suggestion is just to go to either Menards or Home Depot or anything and look at their actual tool belts. They're made for hanging hammers and everything, but they'll fit a spade or a little trowel or anything just fine.
Yeah, that makes some sense too. And maybe less expensive as well. That's a good idea. Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it. What about hoses, Aaron? There is nothing more frustrating than a leaky hose, and I have spent a lot of money on hoses, and I wind up with leaky ones more often than not. You have a great practical solution for that.
Yeah, well, we've been pretty lucky in my mind the past couple of years that we've had pretty decent summer rainfall. But inevitably, anybody who's got a garden is spending some portion of their life doing watering during the summer. And one of the things that we swear by here is a really high quality shutoff valve for your hoses and your other watering instruments. So this basically, I mean, it's a pretty simple addition to your tool cabinet, but it's what I'm have on my list here is a brass valve, again from A.M. Leonard. So it's brass, it's very durable, and then it's a ball valve that just allows you to really carefully control how much water is coming out of your hose at any given time. And then the thing with the brass ones is they're a lot less likely to leak than many other valves. So you can use it in combination with any of your other favorite watering, you know, sprinklers or just a watering wand with a rosette to really get the water exactly where you want it and not all over your clothes or in your socks or some of that still happens too, especially when we really start firing up the sprinklers around here. But when it comes to just kind of daily watering, having a good valve really takes it to the level of kind of that zen-like task that a nice session watering in the garden can really provide some good mental clarity and some good relaxing time for you to absorb your garden when you're not getting sprayed in the face.
And by the way, I'll mention again that we have links on the website. Just go to WPR.org/Larry, and all of these gifts that Aaron's mentioning, we have them on the website, and you can find links to, you know, take you right straight to the companies that she's talking about. So wanted to mention that again. Bob in Sheboygan, let's go to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Okay, I made a cart for my wife for gardening. Okay, we got 2.5 acres, and so I took 2 golf carts. I bought them at a Goodwill store, okay, so I could widen the axle. Okay, and then I got 1.5 PVC pipe down in the slots where your golf clubs would be, and she just had her rake in there, her shovel in there, any of her lawnmower utensils, and then where the golf balls go in, that's where she keeps all her seeds or small plants, and it works out just perfect. You can pull it all over the yard, and there's no weight to it at all.
What do you think of that, Aaron?
I love it. I love it. You know, we have our little golf carts, electric golf carts here that we run around in all time. But one of the things that we're looking at that's actually being adopted in the city of Madison on State Street down at the mall is actually bicycles that are equipped with a big kind of, you know, load hauling carrying space, and I don't know if they have some sort of like small dump on them, but we've been really thinking how it'd be so fun, especially for visitors to see, like, well, what are they doing over here now? Like, this is Madison, the biking city. We do even our gardening with bicycles here.
Are they electric ones, or are they just all air and powered?
I would just have to convert mine so it would be all air and powered. I don't really need much more than that. Yeah, I love the idea with the golf caddy, though. That sounds super handy.
Yeah, it does indeed. Bob, thanks so much. A great idea. Thank you. Well, Laura in New Berlin, your question. What have you got on your mind?
Hi, I heard the question about the wildflowers, you know, just throwing them on top of the snow. Can I do that with pumpkin seeds that we saved from this last Halloween?
The danger with the pumpkins is that if they germinated a little too early next year, they could still very easily be hit by a frost. So the pumpkins you want to plant more like a regular garden vegetable. So for cucurbits, you really want to plant those after the danger of the last frost is over. So probably the earliest would be mid-May or so. But they're not going to benefit at all from any type of winter sowing.
Yeah, makes sense. Margie in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Margie.
Hi. I love this show. I have a gift idea. It's called a root. It's from A.M. Leonard, good old A.M. Leonard. It's called a root slayer, S-L-A-Y-E-R. And it is a shovel that has jagged on the edges. It looks like an arrow, but cut off at the bottom. And I can use it to dig sod. I can use it to dig through this is Mount Horeb, so it's rock. So dig through the rock and get some of that out of there. It cuts perennials. It's just the best tool that I've got. I love it. I keep recommending it to my friends, show them how it works, and they all go out and get one. But I got mine at A.M. Leonard.
The Root Slayer Shovel.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's sharp on the edges are actually cut in and serrated, so it looks like I don't know what it looks like. It looks like one of my plants, a dragon plant here. It's wonderful. And the other one is called, my favorite weeder is a cobra. And that
cobra.
Is made, yep, it's a cobra tool. It's made in Wisconsin. It has the head of a cobra. It's a handle is curved. The blade is curved, and then there's a sharp point at the end of it, and the handle is really comfortable. I have osteoarthritis. And it's really comfortable for my hand to use, so it's a good tool.
Oh, well, thank you, Margie. And Aaron, have you used the Cobra tool or the Root Slayer?
I have seen the Root Slayer, and I'm actually looking at it on the A.M. Leonard website right now. And I'm glad to hear that that's such a highly recommended product. And it definitely looks like a very burly tool. And then the Cobra head weeders, yeah, we have a bunch of those here. And they're really handy for a variety of garden tasks. The other thing that I like both about the Cobra head weeder and additionally, it looks like this Root Slayer shovel is they make different handle lengths. So the Cobra head weeders, we have some that are on a short handle, you know, maybe an 8-inch handle that you would use while you were kneeling or squatting at ground level. But then they also make another tool that is like a stand-up size. So if you're working your veggie garden and you're would like to be standing up, there's a taller version of that as well, which I think is really great. Same thing with the little shovel here, is they have a shorter version that you could use while you were kneeling or squatting, and then also a standard long-handed version.
What's the approximate cost on those? Do you have that there?
Let's see here. It looks like the Root Slayer is going for the mini one is about $30.
Okay.
So, yeah, maybe. And then I'm not seeing the taller one right now, but maybe like 30 to 50 would be my guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the taller ones are 51, 74.
Okay. There we go. Well, Margie, thank you so much. Appreciate that call. Richard in Janesville, your turn. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I got a chance to buy fall planting bulbs, tulips, daffodils, and that for pennies on the dollar. And I got a bunch of big leaf piles, which aren't, you know, ground isn't frozen underneath. I was wondering if I could, move them and plant the bulbs there or the hold them until I can get them planted next spring or something after they bloom or something.
Well, I think you could do it now, couldn't he, Aaron?
Yeah, if you are able to penetrate that soil and it's not frozen so hard that you can't get in there, any time is still a decent time to plant bulbs. So good thing you were stockpiling all those leaves to keep your ground thawed.
Yeah, that makes sense. And probably better to do it now than wait till spring. You don't know how many you're going to lose.
Yeah, definitely.
So there, you're fine to do that, Richard. Let's go to Chris in Wisconsin Dells next. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Well, I'm back in Shorewood. I was greeted with a bag at my front door with 10 pine trees and 2 lilac bushes. I always contribute to the Arbor Day, and I guess I got a thank you gift, but it said plant immediately. Now, what do I do with these? I put some more water into this long plastic bag, and I put it in a flower pot, but what do I do?
So, Chris, these are small, right? They're just...
Yes. They're about 3 feet, the pine trees, and the lilac bushes are a couple of skinny little branches. But I remember a few years ago, they sent me, I don't know, a flowering tree, and I just got it early enough. I plunked it in the ground, and now it is a beautiful flowering tree, a bush. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but what do I do with these pine trees and lilac bushes?
Wow. Aaron, what can be done?
So do you know about when they did arrive? Like, how long have they been sitting there at your home?
Well, they've been sitting a couple of days.
Oh, okay.
And there was moisture in the bottom of them, and I just poured a little more cold water so that they would stay moistured. But I can't leave them like that for a couple of months, can I?
Sure. Well, okay. So we're going to maybe take a bit of a combined approach here. Because the main thing, the first thing that you really need to do is get those plants in some sort of soil. So for the deciduous material, you said you had some lilacs in there?
Yeah.
Those, if you are able to find a place in your yard where they would be appropriately sited and the soil is not frozen, you could take a chance and try to get those in the ground yet this winter, because they are dormant. So they're not really going to be doing anything other than kind of cozying down in that soil for the winter, and then hope for the best in the spring and see them leafing out. And the second option for your conifers, or if you wanted to do this both with the conifer and the lilac, is put those into pots. So you're going to want to find some appropriately sized plastic or terracotta or whatever type of pots that you have, and some good quality potting soil. Pot them up and then just hold them kind of in a dormant state for the rest of the winter. So pot them up, water them in, and then just put them somewhere where they're going to stay cool but not freeze. So if you had a slightly heated garage where it was going to be, you know, maybe 40 through most of the winter, then they'll just kind of be, again, in their dormant state through the winter. And then hopefully in the spring, when it starts to warm up a little bit, take them outside and watch for them to leaf out. The reason that you don't want to put the conifer outside in any way right now is it's not established and its roots are not able to bring up any sort of water. And so if you put it outside right now, it will still lose water through its foliage, and it'll basically just crisp up and probably not even survive the winter. So that's a tough one, though. That's pretty late to be trying to deal with that sort of plant material.
Yeah, for sure. Well, good luck, Chris. Thank you so much for calling. You're going to have to call us next spring and let us know how it turned out. Thank you very much. Oh, boy. Richard in Janesville, it's your turn. Hi, Richard. Oh, let's see here. Let's take an email from Liz in Wausau. She emailed that a tool belt is nice, especially for a pruning clipper, but to carry more, she has a dedicated bucket that holds all of her little tools, plus room to add seed packets, et cetera. It's easy to spot, so she doesn't have to leave it behind in the garden. She can keep track of a shovel, of a pail. That makes some sense. Bob emailed that last summer at Olbrich, he saw a plant he really liked, a flowering maple called Biltmore Balgon.
Yeah.
And a friend gave him cuttings last week. What's the best way to root them now?
Oh, that is an awesome plant. If you are able to get a hold of that, that is very, very exciting. And we frequently are, so this plant, when you say flowering maple, it's a little bit confusing, but these are actually plants in the species is Abutilon. And I believe they're in the hibiscus family. So they have a very exotic kind of tropical looking flower. And here we overwinter ours from year to year in our little hoop houses. And so those plants grow really vigorously during the growing season, and they can easily reach 7 or 8 feet in the course of a growing season.
Wow.
So if you have, yeah, they're really fantastic. So it's Abutilon Biltmore Balgon is the name of the cultivar. And what I would do with cuttings at this time of year is I believe that's a pretty readily rootable cutting. So you would probably have success just doing the method where you suspended it in a glass of water. And if you have a few cuttings, I would maybe try a few of these techniques and then see what is working best for you. So you could put a little bit in a glass of water. Otherwise, if you wanted to go the extra mile, get some sterilized potting soil, a lightweight potting soil, and if you have a heat mat, and then stick those cuttings with a little bit of heat and some gentle grow light or a sunny window, and then keep them nice and moist and see if you can get some roots off of those.
All right. That makes good sense, too. Let's see. Todd emailed that a small business in Holman, Wisconsin, Hypnotions, I think it's called, hypnotions.com, they make all their own tool belts. They have a gardener's and landscaper's tool belt to hold all your tools. And he has a different tool belt from them and very high quality. And it's hypnotions.com. So H-I-P. Notions, NOTIONS.com, and they make their own tool belts for sale. I'm going to have to write that down, hypnotions.com. Check that out.
I'm checking out their website right now, and this is awesome. And it looks like they have tool belts that are geared to all different activities. Like there's even ones that are meant for physicians and nurses.
Wow.
The wedding event planner tool belt. So they're really here to address all your tool belt needs.
Wow.
And a local product. You can't beat that.
We should put that one up, Jill, as well on our website, hypnotions.com, because that's a Wisconsin company too, which is nice.
This is great. Oh, and a sign of the times, they even have a cotton face mask.
Okay. All right, hypnotions.com. Thanks, Todd, for that email.
That's awesome. Thanks, Todd.
Paul in Eau Claire, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call.
Love the show, Larry. I just had to pass along. My father-in-law bought my wife something called the Drip Garden, D-R-I-P, Drip Garden, for last Christmas, and she absolutely loves it. It is a continuous water that you don't have even, she doesn't even have to tend to it. And we go on vacation sometimes, and oh my God, the tomatoes that we've gotten off of that mechanism. But if you look up Drip Garden on the internet, I think the company's out of Southern Illinois, but it is a credible invention. And I tell you what, I keep thinking about getting on there and buying some more, one for somebody else. But the Drip Garden, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's incredible.
Huh. I have not heard of it. Aaron, have you?
I have now. again, I'm looking at just their website here. And so it looks like this is actually more of a garden kit where it comes with the containers and the watering apparatus kind of all set up for you. Yeah, very neat. It looks kind of spacey.
Paul, thank you. Appreciate it. Well, Diane in Ellison Bay has a gift idea, I think. Hi, Diane.
Yes. Hello. It's an inexpensive Christmas gift idea for an avid gardener. I dreamt this up, and I've tried it for the past several years, and it's great. You know those containers that you get Chinese food in with the little metal handle and, you know, it's just a square container?
Yeah.
Okay. Just take a nail, punch some holes in the sides so you've got some drainage. Fill it up with whatever kind of soil you want to fill it up with. Start your seeds inside. And I managed to get eventually I ended up with 80 of them sitting in one of those little inside greenhouses where you unzip the front of it. Okay, you just fill it up, start your seeds, and because there's wax, a little bit of wax on the inside, they tend to not make a mess, because I was doing this over carpeting. And to be safe, I had a boot tray underneath there. I figured it's, you know, early April, I don't need the boot tray anymore. I don't even want to see it anymore, but you know, that took care of the bulk of it. And when the plants are big enough, you take them outside, and because of that slight little wax coating on the inside, they just come right out in that lovely shape. And just plop them in the ground.
Well, that sounds like a pretty darn good idea. What do you think, Aaron?
I mean, I love it. That's one of the great things about gardeners, is that we're scrappy and we're creative. And most gardeners can take, you know, any amalgamation of items and tools, and they can just get the job done. And everybody will have a different tack about how they're going, you know, going about their task or making what they want to make. But boy, if there's not a million ideas out of there, and, you know, 98% of them are good.
Diane, I love it. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Aaron Presley, our guest today, horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Always fun to have her come by. You can join in. Maybe you've got a gift idea or a suggestion for gardeners. I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Or go ahead and email us with your gardening questions as well. At ideas@wpr.org. So we're taking gardening, you know, vegetables or flowers questions, or we're taking gift idea suggestions. We're doing all of it today with Aaron Presley. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Aaron Presley, horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. We've been talking about holiday gifts for the gardener, and we've been taking some questions relating to vegetables and flowers, all kinds of herbs, all kinds of things with her today. So join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Or email at ideas@wpr.org. Karen in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi. I have been struggling trying to grow herbs indoors. I brought some in from the summer that were fantastic, and then I did the battle with fungus gnats for a couple of months. And now I have some beautiful plants, but I cannot seem to get live plants from anywhere. I live in the Milwaukee area. I know it's winter, and I just am kind of in a quandary where how do I fill up this herb garden and make it grow in the winter?
What do you think, Erin?
Yeah, I have a feeling that finding live plants is going to be pretty tricky at this time of year. And I was kind of searching my brain for some more houseplant style herbal plants that you could maybe stick in there that you could find at a good garden center. So something like maybe like kaffir lime comes to mind, which is a lime that has an edible leaf that's actually used for flavoring and would be sold kind of more as a houseplant. As far as coming, as far as actual, your traditional herbs, parsley, basil, rosemary, plants of those at this time of year are going to be really hard to find. So I think your best bet is actually going to pick a few that you think would be easy to grow from seed. So like parsley or cilantro, basil, super easy to start from seed, and use those to try to get some volume in your herb garden over the winter.
Yeah, I think that's the best idea for sure, Karen. And, you know, it's not difficult to do that. I mean, if you've got a sunny location, right? Or do you need grow lights, Erin?
I think unless you have a super sunny south window or, you know, a really sunny sun porch, basically anytime you're trying to grow herbs inside, you're going to benefit from a grow light.
Okay. There you go, Karen. Thank you. Let's go to Isaac in Sun Prairie. Hi, Isaac.
Hello, good morning. I got a question. So I've been listening to the show, and I heard something about wildflowers. And
yeah.
I've been wanting to plant wildflowers on top of a septic area because it's just got a bunch of weeds, and it looks pretty messed up. And I got the seeds, and I was going to do it in the fall, but I got too busy, and I didn't do it. So now my question is, can I do it in the spring? And if I do so, are they going to bloom or not?
I think a part of it depends, again, on the preparation. Have you already got a lot of plants, weeds and so forth, sitting on top of those, of that area?
No, they're not there. I pulled them out and I got everything. I was going to add more topsoil because it's got a lot of rocks in there. And I was going to prepare everything to do it. But like I say, I didn't have the time to do it. But now yeah. The area's clean and I was gonna throw some weed killer before I do. I add some more soil and then throw the seeds on it.
Erin, what do you think?
From the sounds of it, it sounds like you maybe have a little. If you're talking about applying weed killer and doing additional preparation, yet it sounds like you might have a little ways to go to really have a soil bed that's ready to accept seed and for you to have success there. If you're really battling any sort of weed pressure on the front end and you're trying to manage the existing weeds while you're also trying to identify and nurture seeds as they're coming up, that's going to be very challenging. So I would say hold tight for this winter and then get out there in the spring and make sure that your seed bed is really ready to go before you start investing time and money and effort into establishing what you really want to see there.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. You don't want to start with a seed bed that's not really prepared. So there you go, Isaac. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Dennis in Two Rivers, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Larry. Gardeners might wonder what to do with their straight-edge shovels in winter. I use mine for scraping ice because when I use the chopper for chopping ice, but when I use the chopper for scraping ice, they end up bending and breaking. So I just use the chopper for chopping and the straight edge shovel for scraping ice.
Makes sense to me. What about you, Erin?
Yeah, sure thing. I know we're very fortunate here in Madison. We got a nice snowfall over the weekend, but the beginning of it, it did start out with a little bit of slush, and we've got some pretty serious ice out there in some areas. So that's a good recommendation.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you, Dennis. Lena in Stevens Point, on to you now. Hi, Lena.
Hi. Good morning, Larry and Erin. So I'm hoping that you can help me out with this. It's more of an indoor plant question, and I know that, Erin, you're a horticulturist, but our indoor plants are thriving. We have them under UV light. We have a mix of different kinds of things. We even have an ivy that's getting a little out of control. And they seem to be doing really well. Some plants we want to bring outdoors when it gets warmer, but they seem to be growing a mold on the top of the soil. And like I said, they're doing really well. It doesn't seem to be affecting them whatsoever. So we've just kind of been scraping it out and putting new soil on the top. But obviously, like, it's annoying the amount that we have to do it. I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for any natural remedies for that. I try to stay away from too many harsh chemicals if I can, but wondering if you have any ideas.
Sure. I guess I'm maybe curious if you can identify the source of this mold in the first place, because it seems like that's kind of unusual for that to just be appearing unless you really had a lot of moisture in the soil or something like that. One thing I know that we do encounter here is we use some organically sourced fertilizers. And some of those fertilizers, since they are based on natural products like chicken manure or fish fertilizer and stuff, they can create a little bit of mold on the top of the soil surface as they break down and start to do their work in the soil. But we find that can really be mitigated even if you just work those fertilizers in underneath about an inch of the soil so that they're not right on top. So if you think it might come from something like that, you could try to just kind of mix up the top inch of the soil and disturb it a little bit and just incorporate that mold back under, especially if it's not bothering any of your plants. The other thing that I could maybe suggest is some sort of top dressing of the soil surface that would, you know, keep sunlight from hitting the soil surface and maybe provide not such a favorable place for the mold to grow. So if you considered topping any spare soil in your pots with a decorative little stones or some sort of kind of snazzy little marbles or something like that, that could kind of interrupt that cycle of the mold forming as well.
Yeah, good idea. Good luck. Thank you, Lena. Kevin in Madison, your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, hello, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call.
I have a, let's see, an eastern exposure, eastern hillside, pretty steep, probably 30 degrees, and I've cleared it of buckthorn since I bought this place, just a ton of buckthorn and honeysuckle. And as I've cleared it, the bluebells are just going crazy. It's the biggest bluebell patch I've ever seen. It's unbelievable. And my question is there any way to contain it without putting chemicals down?
If these are really bluebells, Virginia bluebells, those should be real easy to dig. So I would just say, and not that you're going to be able to contain them entirely within 1 year, but they're not extremely vigorous or really hard to dig out. So what I would say is just, you know, next year, if you want to wait until after they all bloom so you can really enjoy their full floral show, and then pick which patches you want to eliminate and just dig them out with a shovel. We have tons of those here in our wildflower garden, and they are pretty vigorous, so they do kind of, you know, pop up all over the place. But they're easy to dig. And the other thing that I would recommend with the bluebells is, since they are ephemeral and they're foliage starts to die back pretty early on in the year, like in, you know, by the end of May, they're already turning brown. You can feel free to cut those back maybe a little bit earlier than you would some of your other ephemeral foliage and just get them out of the way where they're encroaching on your other plants. And that can be a good alternative to actually digging them out.
Mm-hmm. Makes good sense. Kevin, thank you. We had Kimberly in Fox Lake called to mention some grocery stores carry live herb plants in the produce section, and that is true. So that's for that earlier caller who was looking for plants. And then one other thing here, an item on your list, your holiday list, gift list, is very interesting, and it's made from the husks of coconuts. Tell us about that.
Yes. So this is a material that you might be familiar with. It's coir is what it is. And so if you imagine going to the garden center and you see the hanging baskets, and some of them sometimes are planted in kind of this hairy, fibery liner, and yeah, that's coir. And what that's actually made of is the spongy, kind of the outer husk of the coconut seed. And you may or may not know, But the especially peat moss and also sphagnum moss that are really prevalent in a lot of container potting mixes, those resources are becoming increasingly limited and experiencing a lot of pressure from the horticulture industry. Imagine all the millennia it took to lay down those beds of peat moss in, you know, Canada. And so there's a lot of effort going into finding alternatives for those. So one of my favorites is this coir. And what I have on the list there are actually coir chips. So it's more of like a wood chip type consistency of big pieces of coir. And then they hold tons of water, which is great for hanging baskets and container mixes.
Wonderful idea. And all of the suggestions for gifts are on our from Aaron are on our page, our website. Just go to WPR.org/Larry and look over in the program notes and you're going to find it there. Aaron Presley, our guest today. She's a horticulturist at Obrick Botanical Gardens in Madison. Always great to have her come by. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Aaron Presley, horticulturist at Obrick Botanical Gardens in Madison. She cares for the herb, wildflower, and pond gardens there, and her interests include native woodland gardening, low maintenance, and sustainable gardens, and anything having to do with growing, cooking, and eating your own herbs and vegetables. So, what gardening questions do you have? What about gift ideas for the holiday season gardener? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And we have Tom from Minocqua on board here, so let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call.
My question is, I've always admired those wonderful, beautiful ferns you see outside in the forest, outside by the house. And every time I try to transplant them and or try to bring them inside, it seems they all die, like, immediately. Can you transplant them at all? Can you get those ferns to grow somewhere other than where they are?
That's why they're growing where they are, probably. Aaron, comment?
Say the one thing also to always be real careful about when it comes to transplanting wild plants is make sure those things are maybe already on your own property or you're not taking them out of a wild environment where there's not really that many of them. But ferns, you know, generally do pretty well in any sort of part shade environment, part to full shade with a decent amount of moisture. So I don't really see a reason that your transplants should be doing poorly. But I would say definitely springtime is the best time for that. If you're going to attempt it again, just make sure that you have really consistent water through the whole transplant process. And aside from that, I don't really have any special tips.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much for calling, Tom. Well, Pam Lee in St. Paul, Minnesota, your turn. Hi.
Hi, it's actually Pam Lee. But thank you for Pam Lee.
Okay.
That's okay. It's unusual. I have a pond with goldfish in it, and I really want to try to, you know, have a fountain in it that's not electrically powered. So do you have a good solar-powered fountain suggestion?
What do you think, Erin?
I sure do not. I'm sure such a thing exists, but I cannot speak to the technologies that are out there for that.
It's one we can't help you with, I'm afraid. Penley, I'm sorry. Maybe somebody else has an idea and can call in with a suggestion for a solar water pump for a pond. So stay listening. Let's go to Jennifer in Mount Horeb. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello. Thanks for taking my question. I received a lovely gift in the mail from the Netherlands of some assorted spring flowering bulbs, and all in kind of a... biodegradable arrays. So you could put them right in the ground, but I'm in Mount Horeb, so I don't know when I can plant them or what I should do with them until I can plant them. It's big, so I don't have room to force them.
Oh, you don't have, yeah, you don't have any room to force them. Even if you stuck them in a really big tub or something like that, or are you able to break up this package and plant them in some individual pots?
I could, but it's about, you know, 30 or 40 bulbs in about a 13-inch array, so I really don't have the refrigerator room. I mean, can I put them in some pots and stick them outside for a while, or...
Yeah, so what we do with forcing bulbs is we typically actually force a lot of bulbs just in pots outside too, not in the house in the winter. So what we'll do is we'll take the bulbs in the fall, pot them up in a pot like you normally would. So use good potting soil with good drainage, bury them at like the typical level you would if you were planting them outside. So, you know, probably 2 to 3 inches deep, and then just stash those pots wherever you can that they will stay cold enough that the bulbs don't sprout, but that they also don't freeze solid. So here at Oldbrook, a lot of times we'll take those pots and we'll bury them outside in the soil, or stick them in kind of a protected corner and throw like a whole ton of wood chips on top of them. So something where you can keep them from freezing, but keep them cold enough that they're not sprouting. And then when spring starts to arrive, just pull them out to where they can get sunlight and they'll kind of wake up and do their thing at the same time as the other bulbs that you see that are planted in your landscape.
Good ideas. Jennifer, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. We have open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Elizabeth in Poinette says the man with the bluebell problem may have creeping bellflower instead. And I guess that could be a problem.
That would be a problem if that's really what he has and not Virginia bluebells, because those are very difficult to get rid of.
Yeah, so you might want to look up creeping bellflower to that person and check and make sure that that's not, hopefully that's not what you have for sure. Well, another item on your holiday gift list is near and dear to your heart. How is the Oldbrook Botanical Gardens doing their plant sale this year, and how can we give it for the holidays?
Oh, this is really great. So I think one of the hallmarks of COVID life is a lot of, you know, entities and gardens like ourselves are finding different ways to fulfill our mission and do the same things that we know and love and are important to us. So this upcoming spring, we are not having our normal Mother's Day plant sale with the pros in person. We decided that was just too risky to try to plan for that. So what we're doing is a pre-order plant sale, and we're taking orders all through the winter up until February 1st. And we're really focusing on some plant selections that are especially important to us here at Oldbrook, and also really trying to support the 18 to 24 million new gardeners that the United States gained this year, which I think is just an incredible development of COVID, was that so many people turned to their gardens and, you know, growing food and these things to give them a sense of security and solace in this time. So we're offering pre-order plant sale items, and then they'll be available for pickup in April and May. And we're kind of trying to just make it really easy for people. So we have some vegetable garden and herb garden kits. We have bare root fruit trees for anybody who might be interested in starting a small scale home orchard or just adding a, you know, apple or a pear or peach to their yard. And then maybe the most innovative part of the sale is we are offering basically like a starter perennial garden kits. And they emulate a lot of the spaces that we have here at Oldbrook, and they're kind of problem solvers. So we have three kits, and each kit comes with 32 individual plants. And one of the kits is mimics our gravel gardens. So it's for a full sun site and can tolerate very hot and dry conditions. Another one of the kits is modeled on our Moonlight Meadow, so it's a very dreamy selection of all white flowers. And then a third is kind of a shady, very textural woodland carpet, assortment of plants that will do well in a shade garden and additionally be able to take some dry shade, which is always very challenging. And we've curated in these kits, each of them has about a selection of six plants. So we really pick things that are going to create a good backbone for perennial gardens, and they're designed to be able to be used to start an entirely new garden space. Or they're also just very adaptable, dependable plants if you want to add just a little bit of variety and mixture into your existing gardens, have some new plants to play with that maybe you're not familiar with. So you can find out a lot of information about that on our website. And we've already had some pretty good sales, and we're really excited about being able to offer these plants in April and May of next year. It's something to really be hopeful about and look forward to.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. And, you know, right now I'm just looking into my living room because I'm broadcasting from home, and I'm on the mantle of my fireplace. I have a glass birdhouse, and you look inside and it's got a glass egg in it. It happened to be a one of a kind, but I bought it at the gift shop at Olbrich, and I know many other botanical gardens could use your the help right now, and your gift shop is a good idea, I think. Stop there.
Yeah, definitely. The gift shop is open physically during the hours that the building is open, but additionally, over the past several months, the staff has worked very hard to get all of the offerings online. So you can shop online and then just come in to Olbrich just for a quick pickup.
And I think another good idea is a gift certificate from your local garden store. Not a bad idea at all.
Yeah, we're lucky here in Madison. We have such high quality independent vendors. And winter is always a hard time for garden centers in general. So anything that you can do to keep them going, get out there and buy your poinsettia or amaryllis, or get your friend a gift card for spring. You know, every little bit helps, especially in this economic climate.
Kathy in Lake Delton, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind today?
About 3 years ago, I got a Christmas cactus in a 4-inch pot. It was lovely. It bloomed. And it's kept on growing, and then I put it in a six-inch pot, and it keeps growing. It gets new segments, and it will not bloom. And I'm wondering, is there anything I can do to make it bloom, or why isn't it blooming?
Ignore it. If you ignore it, it'll probably bloom. But I'm being a little facetious. But Aaron, what do you think?
This is a very classic question, I think, because one thing that can really help with the Christmas cacti is they are sensitive to the length of the day. And so when we get these short days and long nights, that's what encourages them to flower. So if you have your Christmas cactus in a room where you have a lot of additional lighting, say in your living room where you're turning the lights off and on, or you have the lights on later in the evening after the sun has set, that can kind of confuse the cues that the Christmas cactus is receiving about how long the days are. So I always tell people to keep their Christmas cacti in a room where you're not using the lights a whole lot. So if you have a spare bedroom or an office or something where you're not working in the early morning or later at night, and allow the Christmas cactus to get in tune with just the natural sunlight, that's what allows it to understand that it's time for it to be able to bloom, and you'll get some flower buds.
Yeah, I had one in my office that bloomed all the time, and it was, I think, because the lights went off, you know, at the end of the day and didn't come back on until, you know, 7:30 the next morning, and that really made a difference. And I didn't water it every minute either, or I didn't fertilize it either. So... Benign
we love
neglect.
Things that thrive on neglect. Yes.
There you go. Thanks, Kathy, for that question. Kathleen in Houston, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I have two questions about a pear tree that's in the yard. Every year it blooms, but the pears are really little, and they have black spots all over them. And somebody told me that you have to have two pear trees for it to do what it's supposed to do. But I don't – but it's really a healthy tree, and it blooms pears, but they're little, and they have lots of black spots over them. It's an old tree, too.
That could be part of the problem, too. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I would say, especially if you have a real old tree, it might just be an old cultivar that hasn't been, you know, adapted for disease resistance and some of the traits that more modern fruits have been bred for. But as far as your question about having a second pear tree to have successful fruiting, if you're getting fruit at all, that means that there is another pear tree somewhere in your area that's providing pollen. And that part of it isn't affecting your fruit quality by any means.
Yep. I think it's probably the age of the tree, Kathleen. It may be time for a new one. Let's thank you for calling. Gerard in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Great show. Thank you, Larry and Aaron. So I love cantaloupe, and I'm in, you know, the Milwaukee Cedarburg area. So I got a cantaloupe from the grocery store. And after I ate it, I took the seeds and basically planted them in the yard late in the season, June, early July. I cut up the rind and mulched it in as well. And in about a month, month and a half, I actually got a bunch of little cantaloupes growing. And I was so happy, excited. I even had one large enough to eat a little bit. So any improvements on that idea, obviously earlier in the season, but is that something that's considered doable in the future as well?
I guess my question to you was, the cantaloupe that you ate, any good? Was it flavorful? Did you
actually
like it?
It was a little larger than fall. Like, I ended up, and after, as I went into August and early September, I ended up getting about over a dozen for sure of little cantaloupes. But so the largest one was between a golf ball and a softball, and it actually was. It was sweet. It was orange. And I loved it. So I saved the seeds, and I'm going to try it again next year. But I was wondering if there's any tips you might have to improve my process.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, if you really wanted to grow a crop of great cantaloupe that you could depend on, buying seeds is going to be the way to go, because just using seeds that come in a fruit that you got at the store, it's hard to tell if those seeds within the cantaloupe are going to be true to seed and produce a plant and a fruit that is really high quality. But if you had fun and you had good success with what you did last year, why not? If anything, just start a little bit earlier, you know, plant those things after the last frost date is over, and you'll hopefully get some fruit earlier on in the summer. And if it's working for you, I'm not going to tell you that what you're doing is wrong. Or just keep having fun and experiment. And I think I love to hear stories like this.
Thanks, Gerard. Appreciate it. Karen in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. I have some gift ideas that I have felt loved by receiving. And over the years, I've gotten seeds from people who know I like to grow things. And there's just nasturtium seeds that I plant every year that I remember who they came from, and dried beans. And they come in just like an envelope. A friend will just send me seeds, and they'll tell me what they are. And it's just felt then forever. Those seeds kind of become that person's name, like black bean from, you know, Laura. The other seed I love to share is, I have a native prairie, and I harvest the seeds, put them in brown paper bags, and then I label them, and then I give them at Christmas time and have them put them down so they can go through a cold treatment. The other gift I love to give people is a membership to Seed Savers Exchange. It's tax deductible to you. It costs $25, and then they get a catalog and they get free shipping because they're a member. And once I was part of a gift exchange, it was $25 limit, and I gave them a catalog from a seed company I love, and they surprised me with $25 worth of seeds that wouldn't have been ones I picked, but I loved watching them grow. And the other one is the tool helper that I love is a 5-gallon bucket, and they sell these aprons that go over the 5-gallon bucket. So I get a 5-gallon bucket with a handle that's not too hard on your hands, and it's kind of wider, and then I put the apron over it, and all your tools fit in there, and you can put plants in there. And then my most useful tool, and now I'm telling you about this because it's deer hunting season, is one time somebody had shot a small deer, and it had a small antler. And they gave me that antler, and it is the absolute perfect thing for planting everything. They're hard. They go through any kind of soil. And, like, I plant beans with it. I plant onions with it. It just – because it's so hard. And I spray painted it orange because I lose it because it's the same color as the soil. And then my last one that I have loved giving to children is an amaryllis bulb. You know, they come, you know, like from Menards with the container and the soil – and then they grow so fast that I just gave it to my grandchildren recently, and they would take a centimeter stick, and every day they were charting its growth. So those are my gift ideas. Oh,
Karen, you had a bunch of them. Great the ones, aren't ideas. They, Erin?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I have a couple of amaryllis blooming at home right now, and you just can't beat that color at this time of year. It's just such a joy.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that. You had a list. You had a book on your list from Doug Tallamy, who we've had on the show a number of times. And there's hundreds of books published every year on gardening. Why did you choose this one?
Yeah, well, so Tallamy is an entomologist and ecologist, and his work really revolves around how people can use their garden spaces to connect to the wider web of life and contribute to the ecosystem services that are around us. So his book is called Nature's Best Hope, and it just goes through some very simple ways that you can make some small tweaks in your existing landscape and really potentiate the value that you're serving for you know, the soil, for insects, for birds, for mammals, and really tap into this also larger network of gardeners throughout the country that are doing similar activities. And Tallamy is participating in a lecture series that Ulbrich is running throughout this winter too. So we would love it if folks would sign up for the lecture series and check out Tallamy's book. It's really inspiring. And the great thing about it is the things he's showing you how to do are really simple. It's not reinventing the wheel or spending a lot of money. It's just very, very straightforward and rewarding alterations you can make in what you're currently doing to really potentiate how your garden is giving back.
Erin, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. Look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Take care.
You as well. Erin Presley, our guest from Ulbrich Botanical Gardens. All of those gifts, again, go to our website, wpr.org/Larry, and we will have those lists in the notes section. Well, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you'll stay with us right through the afternoon. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.